calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, the filibuster looks like it's cranking up here. Moving on, we're going to see in the next, 3 hours or so, there'll be, in all probability, a cloture vote in the United States Senate to determine whether or not the nomination of Sam Alito will be filibustered successfully. And everybody's counting votes. People are scrambling. Nobody is really sure. The Heritage Foundation has ordered a whole awful lot of catered food as if they're planning a big celebration. We'll see how this thing shakes out. It'll be really, really interesting. The toll-free number for your senator is 888-355-3588 if you'd like to call him. And over the weekend, I did 2 hours on Saturday and 2 hours on Sunday on the Young Turks program. They're doing a filibuster for the filibuster. It was followed by Mike Malloy and Peter B. Collins and Brad Friedman. Their program is continuing. Our program is continuing. Harvey Kushner is with us. He's the contributing editor for Family Security Matters, familysecuritymatters.com, the website. Harvey, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Harvey, I'm assuming that your Family Security Matters, from looking at your website, that you would characterize it as a conservative website?
I would.
Yeah. And that, therefore, you're in support of George W. Bush's position and Sam Alito's position, that George W. Bush should have the kinds of power during what he refers to as time of war to, for example, for all practical purposes, suspend the Fourth Amendment and spy on Americans without a warrant?
Well, part of your statement makes it sound ominous. I'm in agreement with the president on his position, certainly, with what the NSA has done. I don't view it as spying on Americans. I think you have to preface that by saying that this is information that's gathered from information that comes from outside into the United States. I don't think this is a 1960s or 1970s type of invasive type of spying effort that was undertaken by some of our federal agencies back then when America, swung the pendulum in the other direction and developed, the Justice Department developed the Levy guidelines, which sort of stopped the FBI from opening up case files on people ranging from Martin Luther King to Mickey Mantle.
But, Harvey, I think you and I are both old enough to remember that back during that time when Nixon was using the CIA and the FBI to spy on Americans for political purposes and not going before a judge to get a warrant because he knew no judge would issue such a warrant.
I'm against that. I mean,
that the Nixon administration was telling us that they were not doing that.
Well, I think that that's...
and now we have the Bush administration telling us that they're not doing that.
I don't believe it's an analogous situation.
Well, how do you know?
I think I know.
How do you know?
Well, I'll tell you. If you give me a shot at it,
go for it.
I will. I don't have perfect information, but I've worked for many law enforcement agencies training them. I worked for the FBI and training them, certainly United States Probation Department. I was a special consultant on intelligence matters and other agencies, and I talk about that in my book, Holy War. And quite frankly, I don't believe we have the same type of activities taking place. Now, look, I could be wrong, and certainly, that could be taking place. But from my exposure to what our intelligence gathering units are doing and what the war we face with a militant Islam, I think the situation is totally different in the year 2006 than it was 30 years ago.
Harvey, I got to say, I'm a graduate of the Georgia Police Academy, and there are a lot of cops out there who, if they didn't know that they were being watched. And there's a lot of good cops out there, but there are also some bad cops out there who they didn't know that they were being watched.
Bad and everything, too.
Yeah. So that's why we say to the President of the United States, for example, you have to go get a warrant.
No. I think the situation here is different. I think certainly if we're talking about the domestic case in which there was time.
How is it different?
Well, I'll tell you why it's different. The technology which was around way back in, let's say, 1978, when the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act was developed, certainly has changed with the Internet and the email and with cell phone technology. And you know, you were a graduate of a police academy. You understand that the landline poses a different threat level than a cellular phone does or email does, anonymous email does. And so when you're out and fighting a war and, you know, you have to make an instantaneous decision about something, you don't have the luxury to take the time to go to a court to get a judge.
This is why the FISA law allows 72. You can go ahead and wiretap somebody and wait up to 3 days before you go in and say,
well,
"Oh, by the way, we just wiretapped this guy."
That's right. But the point also is, I think here you have a special situation in that if we openly go to change the law, the 78 law, and I think that, quite frankly, I think both sides of the aisles would be in favor of doing that. I think the discussion of that would bring about what we're doing right now, which I think would put us in harm's way in dealing with,
But, Harvey, the issue before us is not changing the FISA law. The issue before us is George W. Bush breaking the FISA law.
I don't think he's breaking the FISA law.
He admitted he broke the FISA law.
Well,
and a year ago, when he was confronted with it, he came out and said, "Oh no, when you think national security, you think we always get warrants."
Tom, what you're saying is you're making it sound as if he knowingly broke the law. What he's saying is he lied
about it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Excuse me. He has the power to override that, and has elected a government official, especially the chief executive officer, as the commander in chief. When it comes to protecting the general public, he has the right to make these decisions, which affect the very safety of this country. And by the way, I think you would agree that the American people, in recent scientific polling, have showed that they're really pretty split on this issue. And in fact, probably you have more people, more folk out there who are interested in being protected underneath by the NSA than people who are not. So you got to understand.
That was true in Nazi Germany as well. I mean, a lot of people were saying,
Tom, why are you comparing the United States to Nazi Germany?
Because I lived for a year in Germany, and I talked to a lot of people who lived through that period, Harvey.
Come on. You didn't tell me that Harry Belafonte statement that the Department of Homeland Security is comparable to the Gestapo?
What I'm telling you right now, Harry, is that a year ago, when George Bush for 2 years had been spying on Americans without warrants, and he was asked about that, he came right out and he said...
Now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. We're talking about chasing down terrorists.
We're talking about getting
a court order before we do so.
He was lying right through his teeth, Harvey.
Hey, you want me to play my violin now? Listen, he wasn't lying. He was fighting a war, and certain measures are necessary to protect the general public. And quite frankly,
Harvey,
you're spitting in the face
of James Madison. I'm sorry. James Madison was president of the United States in 1812 when we were occupied by the British and they burned down the White House, and he didn't feel it necessary to suspend the Fourth Amendment.
In times of trouble like we're in now, when we face a very serious threat to the security in this country, I don't believe that we've been going down that slippery slope to losing our constitutional freedoms. In fact, I think they're quite protected.
We're talking with Harvey Kushner. He's contributing editor to FamilySecurityMatters.com. Once again, Harvey, let me ask you, given the fact that George W. Bush has refused to go before a court in some hundreds of cases, that you've got Alan Greenspan's wife asking Jim Risen, Andrea Mitchell, asking Jim Risen, was Christiane Amanpour one of those who was wiretapped, who, by coincidence, her husband was very high up in the Kerry campaign, and the wiretapping was happening during the election, just like happened with Nixon. Here's my question to you. It's because George W. Bush refuses to go before a court to ask for these things, how can any of us know that he's not, again, lying to us, and he's actually, in fact, wiretapping his political enemies?
Because I don't believe he is, and I think the American public understands that if you have a dialogue like we're having now, the question is you have to choose sides, and I think the American public will choose sides to be safe and understand that unless there are such egregious actions taken where we literally...
I think the American public is going to choose not to trust a politician, Democratic or Republican.
American public wants to be safe, and they have a right to be safe, and quite frankly, the defenders of American...
So we should just be afraid? That's what this is all about?
Excuse me?
This is all about be afraid?
Well, we have every reason to be. Quite frankly, look at the just recent events which took place in the Middle East. I mean, it shows that terrorism is alive and well and is a method being used.
Harvey, you know how many people die from drunk drivers in the United States every year?
how many people die from influenza, but that's not the point.
Yeah,
exactly.
So what should, you know, what should we appropriately be afraid of? I mean, you talk about this on your website at familysecuritymatters.com.
You're talking about an accident. You're not talking about somebody purposely killing somebody else. I mean, it's a horrible thing that what happens on our roads is slaughter.
Well, look at how many homicides we have in the United States every year that have nothing to do with terrorism.
But that doesn't change the fact that we're at risk because we're targeted by militant Islam.
Harvey, we already know that this guy is spying on literally on grandmothers, on Quakers.
What are you more concerned about? You're more concerned about Osama bin Laden? You're more concerned about George
Bush? I'm not talking about Osama bin Laden. I'm talking about you and me, Harvey. Aren't you going to stand up for America here?
I go to sleep at night fully aware that there might be, and if the NSA wants to listen in, if I'm having a conversation with a known Al-Qaeda terrorist, God bless him.
Family, Harvey Kushner, FamilySecurityMatters.com. Harvey, thanks for coming on and talking with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Photographer's smile, take a break for a while, take a risk, do your very best, take 5 points.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour, $10.7 billion in 3 months. What is that, $3 billion a month? That's about $1 billion every 10 days. That's about $100 million a day, right? If I'm doing my math right. That's how much profit. That's like leftover money. Profit. Exxon just posted for the fourth quarter 2005. $100 million a day? Woo! Anyhow, welcome back to our program. Our telephone number, toll-free, across the United States, 866-440-8466. If you want to drop into our live chat room, TomHartman.com will get you there. And Alan in Arlington, Texas on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better, Alan.
Okay, I just had a couple of things. Firstly, in response to the guest that you just had, I've got a simple question. If Bush doesn't want to change the law to abide by it because public debate would potentially damage us, then why did we just have two public debates on the Patriot Act about to have a third?
Yeah. Well, it goes beyond that. I mean, really the question, and I thought of it after Harvey had hung up, and I should have asked him before, was if this was Bill Clinton saying that he had the right to spy on Americans, and that he was assuring us, he was giving us his word that it was only calls coming in from overseas, but still he didn't want to go before a court. If this was Bill Clinton, would you feel as comfortable? And
that goes without saying that they wouldn't. You know?
Well, yeah, actually, if for him to be philosophically consistent, he would have to say yes, it's okay. But you know, it would have been an interesting question. The next conservative I get on, we'll have more as the week goes on. I'll have to ask that question up. But Alan, you raise a good one.
Yeah, my other question, just I've heard you talk about the exit polls for the 2004 presidential election versus the actual results.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember right, it was 5 million. Kerry should. According to the Patriot polls, Kerry should have won the election by 5 million, actually lost it by 3 million. My question to you is, how accurate of a predictor have those exit polls been since they've started doing those?
The exit polls are so accurate that every other country in the world that uses paper ballots, which is every country in the world except us, uses exit polls to call their elections, even though it may take 2 or 3 days after the election to actually count the ballots, including the election that just happened in Canada just a couple of weeks ago, just a week ago. When I lived in Germany, this is what 43 million people I think live in Germany. They do the elections, pencil on paper, and people who otherwise would be working in the DMV or whatever come in, you know, on election day and participate, and the political parties send people to stand and watch, and it takes them about 4 days to count all the votes. But they know within 10 minutes of the time the polls close who won. And those exit polls in Germany have never been off by more than 0.1% since the 1950s when they first started doing it. Our exit polls in the United States until the 2000 election had never been off by more than 1.5%. And yet now we're seeing exit polls that are off by 8 points in some states.
Yeah, that's telling. It's good to see you guys, you and the Young Turks, kind of joining up a little bit, maybe know, you guys are worthy of your platform, and I'd like to see more of that kind of stuff. I think it's great.
Well, thank you, Alan, and thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Ron in Oak Ridge, Oregon. Hey, Ron.
Hi. Hey, I called up because I am more concerned about George Bush taking away my rights than I am worried about the terrorists. I could care less about the terrorists. I live in a house where I had to put up a fence around my property after I fled across the United States and was harassed for about 6 months after 40 years. I now live in my house. I cannot leave my property without being harassed. And, you know, I hear all these people, well, you know, we don't have to worry about the Nazis. We don't have to worry about George Bush. He just keeps saying, trust me, trust me, trust me. This guy, from the minute I saw him, he stole the election. He does this, he does that. Now he wants to become king of the USA. And the next thing we know, we'll be living in Nazi Germany. Now, it sounds crazy. Well, it's not as crazy as you think, my pal, because we got too many lazy, lying, arrogant, zany zeros in Congress who aren't doing their job. If they were doing their job, we never would have went to Iraq. And if they were doing their job, the Katrina survivors would have been taken better care of. We got to fight for our rights.
Spot on, Ron. Spot on, Ron. I absolutely, totally agree with you. Wendy in Whidbey Island, Washington. Hey, Wendy, we have a minute left. What's up?
You did really well in that debate with Harvey, and I was just shocked and terrified the way he obfuscated, told lies, I mean, and manipulated the truth. He evaded your questions. He didn't answer your questions. This weekend, I was speaking to a friend of mine who was talking about the story about the 15-year-old who was fleeing from the police and was shot, and Alito said that that was okay, even though the police knew that the child was unarmed. And the 15-year-old the person with whom I was speaking, who was highly intelligent, was just outraged, and he said, Ted Kennedy, these people would be talking about this if this was true. I think what's going on is that people are so angry that the media is not giving the news that it's just torquing the Republicans.
And this is what I agree with you absolutely, Wendy, and thank you very much for the call and for your comment. This is what Aaron Brown was talking about in this interview that was on one of the news services a couple of days ago, where he said basically his program, Newsnight, when they covered scandals, their ratings went up. When they covered hard news, their ratings went down. And news has become an infotainment, an entertainment-driven business to the tragedy of democracy in America. 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I am young, but I remember it was not so long ago. In a land so bright and shining, this is how the story goes.
And welcome back to your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity, the Tom Hartman radio program, 34 minutes past the hour. The Gang of 14 is going to be meeting. The Gang of 14, that's 7 Democrats, 7 Republicans in the United States Senate who got together and agreed that in order to kowtow to Bill Frist's threat to blow up the Senate rules with a nuclear option and do away with the filibuster, that they would avoid a filibuster, which seems like a fairly cowardly thing to do in the first place. But nonetheless, I don't know, maybe they think it's a noble thing. But the Gang of 14 is going to be meeting. Now, it seems to me that the only reason the Gang of 14 would bother to meet was if the Republicans didn't have enough votes to break a filibuster, if the Republicans don't have 60 votes. And so just so you know, if you want to make some phone calls and let some of the Democrats on the Gang of 14 know that we are watching them, Joe Lieberman in Connecticut, Robert Byrd of West Virginia. And I, you know, as I said earlier, I think that Robert Byrd now has, for the first time in several years, he's 88 years old. This is his record 9th term he's running for. And I have a feeling that he wants to die with his boots on, as it were, that he wants to be sure to have one more term in the Senate. And now John Race, 55, a multimillionaire businessman who owns 15 radio stations and a news radio network serving 56 radio stations and the Dominion Post of Morgantown, West Virginia. This guy is jumping into the race against Byrd. And he's also the president of a steel and limestone producer. So he was very narrowly defeated by Jay Rockefeller back in 84 and by Governor Archie Moore in 1988 in the GOP primary. This guy's been, he's a serious political contender, and I think that Robert Byrd is running scared, frankly. I think it's a tragedy, but he's running scared. So anyhow, Robert Byrd needs our encouragement, not our criticism. Hey, Senator Byrd, we believe in you, and we believe that you'll do what's right, which is to filibuster this appointment. Ben Nelson of Nebraska, even though he's come out and said he's going to vote in favor of Alito, he can still vote in favor of a filibuster or not vote to break a filibuster. Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Daniel Inouye of Hawaii, Mark Pryor of Arkansas, and Ken Salazar of Colorado. And if you want to call the Republicans, John McCain, Lindsey Graham. Now, these were many of the Republicans who expressed concern about George W. Bush's illegal domestic spying program, which will be certainly before the Supreme Court. And before Sam Alito, who has always in his, or virtually always in his judicial career, deferred to power. John McCain, Lindsey Graham, John Warner, Virginia, Olympia Snow and Susan Collins of Maine, Michael DeWine of Ohio, and Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island. And the toll-free number to reach any of them, 888-355-3588. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. I also, yesterday on Sunday and on Saturday, did a couple of hours filling in for Jenk and Jill on the Young Turks program, and they are conducting a filibuster for a filibuster for the filibuster on their program as well. So it's a bunch of us out there. Mike Malloy was on, and Peter B. Collins was on, and Brad Friedman was on, a bunch of us out here, you know, over the weekend trying to turn things around, and we will know in about 3 hours how it shakes out. So now is the time that it's very important to be calling your senator's office. 888-355-3588, toll-free. Our number, 866-440-8466. And Skeeter in Burlington, Vermont, listening on WVAA. Hey, Skeeter, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. First of all, welcome to Burlington.
Well, thank you. It's kind of a welcome back, actually.
Welcome back, yeah, on a daily basis. But anyway, the main thing I wanted to talk to you about is in part in response to your guest that was on in the previous half hour, regarding the NSA wiretaps. I write a weekly blog on the internet on basically on political commentary. And remember when Bush had his press conference on the NSA wiretaps on December 19th?
Yeah.
Well, with just less than 2 hours after that press conference went off the air, I posted on my blog a story revealing that the president may not only have violated FISA, but he may also have defied a 1972 Supreme Court ruling, United States versus Plamondon, in which the justices unanimously ruled 8-0 that wiretaps and other electronic surveillance by the federal government anywhere on United States soil, whether on American citizens or on foreign nationals, for the purpose of for national security purposes, violates the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. And I happen to have the case number. The case number is 70-153.
But, Skeeter, don't you know, times have changed. We don't need those old laws. We don't need that old Constitution. We just need King George.
Well, the fact of the matter is, as far as I'm concerned, we have an authoritarian a regime in the White House that is taking this country in a dangerous direction toward fascism.
I couldn't agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more, Skeeter.
Yeah. What really angers me is that no one in the mainstream media has mentioned this Supreme Court ruling. Not even the New York Times, which broke the story in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty amazing. Skeeter, thanks a lot for the call. What's your blog, by the way?
It's called Skeeter Bytes, and the web address is Skeeter, SKEETERVT .blogspot.com.
Great, so people can check it out. Skeeter, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Steve in St. Louis, Missouri. Steve, you're welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. I just wanted to say, I would like to say to your guest, but I know he's not there anymore, the reason we can't trust this president is the main reason, look at the borders, look at all the jobs going overseas. If you go to Walmart or any other big retailer, and 90% of the stuff is made in China. Those things. He does not care about this country. He only cares about himself and his corporate buddies. And it's just plain facts, and that's what I believe. And that's really all I had to say. I wanted to thank you. Just that guy lit a fire under my butt when he started.
Okay, Steve. Well, you know, I'm agreeing with you absolutely and totally. And thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you. Well, we do have a situation right now that is, frankly, very dangerous, where American jobs are being exported, America's middle class is being eviscerated, and we're seeing the rise of a new aristocracy, which is, by the way, the definition of conservatism is, you know, an aristocracy. And here we are all over again. Nate in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Hey, Nate, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, I have one quick point, but before that, I want to say good on you for helping out with the filibuster for the filibuster.
Oh, it was a hoot. It was my pleasure. A lot of fun.
I know. It's great to – I couldn't hear you because I only have – Sirius. I don't have the Internet right now, but I wish I had that. So, and then I was going to make a point. I was going to say everyone says, oh, you know, you're Bush bashing and all this to us.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's going to come – all this stuff that Bush is doing could come back on him, and he's going to be, if it does, he's going to be really glad that people like us were sticking up for the Constitution and the protections.
I agree, Nate. I agree. And there are a lot of Republicans, I think, who are very concerned about this, that they're not going to be in power forever. And, you know, the voting machines are being outed.
I just want to say one more. Yeah. Because we're not going to treat him. We'll treat him like a common criminal if it comes down like that. We're not going to treat him like they did with Mussolini. That's what makes us better than them. We treat criminals like criminals, not like terrorists and all this.
Yeah. Mussolini, as I recall, was hanged upside down.
Mm-hmm. And then his guts poured out all over the street.
Yeah, and then he was disemboweled. Yeah.
And we wouldn't do that. Because
we definitely wouldn't do that. We are a nation of the rule of law. Nate, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Terrence in Grand Rapids, Michigan at WTKG.
Hi,
hey, Terrence.
Nice to talk to you. I have two quick comments. The first is that the Republicans, all they have is platitudes. The guy that you talked to before, he said, I believe Bush isn't spying on us because he believes he's not spying on us. That's a tautology. And to me, that's belief-based, and it's the first step on the road to fascism. Second of all...
It's called faith-based politics, Terrence.
Yeah, faith-based. And second of all, I want to say what my real worry is these politicians that are trying to play both sides. Like, I think Lincoln Chafee's, what he's going to try to do is he's going to try to vote against Alito, but he's not going to support the filibuster. If you vote against Alito but don't support the filibuster, that's two negatives. Two negatives make a positive.
Yeah, that's playing both sides of the street.
Yeah, that's playing both sides. So what I would suggest people to do is they watch their Democratic senators. I'm watching Levin and Stabenow here in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't support anybody. Levin, he got tricked on Roberts. He said, I support Roberts because I looked in Roberts' eyes, and he said, Roberts, I know he's going to judge fairly. What do we have with the Oregon case?
Right, Roberts with the Oregon Death with Dignity case, Roberts comes out with essentially a religious ruling.
Essentially
saying, you know, I'm a Catholic and this is the position. And I mean, it's not what he said, but you read between the lines and it's right there. And I don't mean that as a slam on Catholics, but it's like your religion should not be the basis of your rulings when you're on the Supreme Court of the United States,
so
regardless
of
what your religion is.
Levin got tricked and he needs to pay us back. He needs to support this filibuster.
Well, the same thing happened to a number of senators. The same thing happened with Ron Wyden here in Oregon. You know, another Democrat who voted for Roberts. And now he has said that he's going to vote not only against Alito, but he's also going to vote in favor of the filibuster. And I agree with you. With Carl Levin, my understanding is Carl Levin's still on the fence. Debbie Stabenow, I understand, is speaking on C-SPAN right now, and I'm waiting to hear what she has to say about that. Terrence, thanks a lot for the call, and we will report it back. Good to hear from you, and thanks for listening there on WTKG in Grand Rapids. Peter in Seattle, Washington, listening on Talk 1090. Hey, Peter, what's up?
Hi, how are you, Tom? Great job.
Thank you.
I'm really enjoying all the great input from all your fantastic listeners, and I encourage them to continue the great work because, you know, this is a great pool of thought that we have going here, but we also have to share it with, you know, the folks who need to be converted for the next election to cast their votes the other way this time because hopefully they learn their lessons.
Yeah, I agree with you, Peter. We need to be spreading the word, and I thank you for your call and your kind words. We've got to get the message out. It's time for a change in America. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Truth on the Radio for a Change. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Samuelito, Samuelito, Bush has named you. You're to be his new Supreme Court nominee. He was tired of all those singers from right-wingers that left Myers bruised and running like warm brie. Oh, Alito, are you to the right of Tito? On which issue, sir, did you vote yay or nay? Oh, Alito, will we soon call you Scalito? When most people wish we'd stick with Sandra Day.
Indeed, and welcome back, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where being progressive never felt so good. Our program brought to you today in part by EcoWine, 1-888-ECOWINE, 1-888-ECOWINE for extraordinary, extraordinarily delicious organic French wines. Welcome back to our program. Ken in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line, WTKG. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I got a question. If the Democrats are successful in their filibuster, the Republicans have threatened the nuclear option. And what do you think would happen if, do you think they would go through with it? And if they did, what would happen?
I think it's a bluff. I don't think that Bill Frist would do the nuclear option. First of all, I'm not even sure that he could get 50 votes, which is what it would take to change the Senate rules to stop the 60-vote rule for a filibuster. I don't think he could. You know, the Republicans see the handwriting on the wall. They're not going to be in control forever. I think that when Trent Lott rolled this thing out in the first place, and Frist, that it was just plain old, you know, hubris. I mean, it was just, you know, drunk with power. And there's been some sobering up going on lately.
Well, what I understand with that, it basically shuts the Democrats out of governing because they control every...
It shuts the minority party out of governing, which means that after November of this year, if the Democrats take the Senate back, and there is a chance of that happening, it would shut the Republicans out of having anything, really any say at all in governance.
So they passed an amendment with that to end filibusters.
Well, the way it is, the filibuster, the way it works is that the rules of the Senate, this is not in the Constitution, it's not law. This is in the rules of the Senate, okay? And it's been in the rules of the Senate for 100-some-odd years. And it's there to protect the rights of the minority party. That if the minority party feels that something is so grievous that they're willing to hurt themselves as well, to basically like, you know, I'm going to hold my breath until I turn blue kind of thing, that they're going to stand up and talk and talk and talk and shut down the Senate so that the Senate can't even do their business, can't do anybody's business. It's just going to shut down the Senate, and that's called a filibuster, that it takes 60 votes to do what's called invoking cloture, which is a fancy way of saying, say to that person, sit down and shut up, and now we're going to have a vote. And then you have a vote, and it only takes a majority to win the vote, but it takes 60 votes to break that filibuster. Now, it only takes 51 votes to change the rules of the Senate. So Frist's scheme, or originally Trent Lott's scheme, was to say, okay, let's simply, you know, if the Democrats are threatening a filibuster, let's just change the rules of the Senate. You know, it's only been there 100-some-odd years. We don't need this anymore. And say that you can break a filibuster with 50 votes, which means that, for all practical purposes, there's no more filibuster, which would radically change the nature and character of the Senate. And, as you said, would hand it over to the majority party, and the minority party would have absolutely no say in what's going on. Not a good thing. And I think a lot of Republicans got it, that's not a good thing. I've got to move along. Ken, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Max in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Max, what's on your mind today?
Oh, I'll tell you what. I called probably a dozen senators about this and sent emails to 20 others. These hearings that we witnessed with Roberts and with Alito, these are such a waste of our time. You know, we learn nothing. I would much rather have our senators spend time trying to find health care for everybody and solve.
But here's the problem, Max. If you look back at the Lochner Court, the 1905, from 1905 to 1937, the United States Supreme Court ruled that national health care was unconstitutional, that minimum wage laws were unconstitutional, that child labor laws were unconstitutional, that maximum hour laws were unconstitutional, that protections for unions were unconstitutional. The court ruled that over and over and over again for 3 years? I can't do math that fast.
And the court will rule whatever way they want to rule.
The court will rule whatever way the court rules as a function. perception of the kind of people on the court.
And I agree with that. We are seeing now our way of life disappearing.
Yeah, it was McKinley who helped stack the court to bring about that 1905 Lochner decision 8 years after McKinley was dead, and Bush is stacking the court right now, and that court survived until 1937.
Yeah, and I would love to see a filibuster. I want to see the parties stand up for what is right for our people, and you know they talk about saving their gunpowder for later, as John Kerry put it. When is later?
Yeah, I know. I'm right there with you, Max. I'm right there with you. It's a waste. Gary in Pittsburgh. We got less than a minute left. Gary, you got a quick point?
Good morning, Tom.
And listen on WPTT. Thank you.
Thank you. This circus of lies. I'm really concerned. I want you to comment on this after. I only got 50 seconds, but I'm gonna. I have to be a thoroughbred here. This circus of lies being perpetrated by the Bush and Cheney administration, we finally have to look at our fellow Americans here, if you will. Me, you, I mean, we're all included here. We need a lot of numbers here to change this around.
I agree, Gary, and I think that us blaming ourselves is not the way to go. I mean, we do have some serious problems. We do have a lot of people who are working so hard they don't have time to involve themselves in politics. That's part of the conservative plan, create a poor working class. And we have a lot of people who are so drunk on infotainment and entertainment that they're not involved in politics and they're not properly informed. And that, in my opinion, is the fault of you know, well, it goes back to Reagan in 87, setting this thing up and saying, oh, you know, radio and television stations have no obligation to, provide for the public benefit in their programming, which was historically done with news. We need to go back to news being news and entertainment being entertainment. Let's clearly define them. And let's have license requirements, for example, be a part of that thing. It's a very simple, straightforward thing to bring information back into the public arena in the United States. It's 57 minutes past the hour. Bob Furtick with Democrats.com coming up with an update on the filibuster that's ongoing right now in the United States Senate right after this.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the pill that will help you escape the matrix. The Tom Hartman radio program. Bob Furtick is with us. He's the chief cook and bottle washer. I don't know, is that sufficiently respectful, Bob, over at Democrats.com?
I'll take it.
Okay. He's the co-founder and president of Democrats.com. Been involved in all sorts of things for all sorts of years. An activist, Democratic Party activist, blogger, journalist, profiled in the New York Times, Newsday, New York Sun, co-founder of the Pro-Choice Resource Center, Eleanor's List, Political Women's Newsletter, and graduate of Yale College, and et cetera. Bob, and you live in New York City.
That's right.
I didn't realize that. In any case, welcome to the program. Democrats.com is doing a great job of providing us with a blow-by-blow, minute-by-minute blog of what's going on with regard to this run-up to a vote to break a filibuster. Has a filibuster actually begun, Bob?
Technically, no. They are speaking on, they're in debate. The test of the filibuster will come at 4:30 today when Senator Frist demands a cloture vote. And if the cloture vote doesn't get 60 votes, then the filibuster is real.
And cloture is a fancy way of saying, okay, guys, we're all done talking. Sit down, shut up, and now vote on whether or not Alito gets on the Supreme Court. And then it's just a 51-vote majority.
Right, and that vote would take place tomorrow morning.
Yeah, and at that point, that vote would probably be more ceremonial than anything else. So the question is whether or not the filibuster will succeed, and where do we stand on this?
We're up to 19 votes for the filibuster by my tally. I'm trying to keep up. People all across the country, including many of your listeners, I'm sure, are calling Congress and trying to get answers out of the undecided senators. They're also watching C-SPAN on C-SPAN 2. You can watch the speeches. John Kerry just gave a fabulous speech. And they're throwing a tally up there that shows that 56 senators support Alito, but that's not 60. So we're still in this fight. And, you know, I know people are passionate about this, and the more calls we make, the better off we'll be.
Well, and there may even be some senators who support Alito but would not break a filibuster. You know, do you know, for example, Ben Nelson, the Democrat from Nebraska, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, Nebraska, has come out and said that he's going to vote in favor of Alito. Has he said that he would vote to break a filibuster?
I'm not sure. I don't think we're expecting any of Alito's supporters to support the filibuster. So there are 56 supporters.
Well, all they have to do is abstain. I mean, with regard to the filibuster, they have to actively, they have to make an action to break the filibuster.
Well, that's right. He has to get 60 votes for cloture.
Right. So if for example, Ben Nelson or you know, some of these other, or some of the Republicans for that matter, you know, Olympia Snowes, Lincoln Chafee, if some of these folks who are at least at the surface saying yes to Alito, if they were to say, if they were to simply refrain from voting on a filibuster, to break a filibuster, they wouldn't, you know, they would not, they would deprive the Republicans of that 60 votes that they need.
Well, it's worth a shot, but that's a very long shot. So there are, you know, I'm writing off the 56 votes for Alito. There are 44 other senators that I think, you know, would be more productive to focus on, and I've narrowed that down on my site to the ones that haven't indicated that they support us. There are 19 who support us, so there are 24 who are in play.
Okay,
and those 20 we should focus on.
And of those 24, I mean, if we go through a list of 24 here, I doubt people can write that fast. I don't know, maybe they can. Why don't we go through it? Who do we have here?
Well, I would point them to Democrats.com, you know, and,
right.
and they can, you know, get the phone numbers right there and go through them. The ones that are at the top of my list are people like Bill Nelson of Florida. These are people who sent messages saying that they're opposed to the filibuster but won't really defend that position. And it's an indefensible position. If they end up voting against Alito, then they should be voting for the filibuster. So that list is Bill Nelson of Florida, Dan Akaka of Hawaii, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Byron Dorgan of North Dakota, and Olympia Snow of Maine, the one Republican on that list. There are also several...
Has Olympia Snow come out and said that she'll vote against Alito?
She's not said where she'll vote on Alito. I suspect she will vote against him,
yeah.
Since she's the most strongly pro-choice woman Republican.
Right. And in fact, she's the co-founder or co-executive director, along with Susan Collins, of Republicans for Choice, who an organization that just a few hours ago came out and said that they cannot support Alito.
Yeah, Olympia Snow has always been a leader in the feminist movement. I would not say the same about Susan Collins, who came up through the Republican ranks. But Olympia Snow really is a woman of character and conviction. And so I think she's the last one. She's the only senator who hasn't said whether she'll vote for Alito or not. She's the only Republican. So I suspect she's going to vote against him.
Interesting. Now, on the Democratic side, we have here in Washington State, right next door to where I am, Cantwell and Murray. What's up with them? The latest that we heard, we called both their offices about 2 hours ago, and Cantwell's office wasn't even saying whether she was going to vote for or against Alito, much less a filibuster. And Murray was saying that she was going to vote. Patty Murray was going to vote no on Alito, but with regard to the filibuster, they didn't have any information.
It's inexplicable to me why Democratic senators would not be telling us how they plan to vote on this. I'm fairly shocked at Maria Cantwell. You know, there's absolutely no reason why she should support Judge Alito.
Well, we don't know that she is. We just know that she's not talking.
Yeah, well, she ought to be talking. This is inexplicable.
Yeah.
But she's apparently noted for not communicating with her constituents and not being responsive, which is something that the people of Washington need to deal with.
And the people of Washington are listening, by the way.
We're on
Talk 1090 in Seattle right now, blasting across the state. So Cantwell and Murray, Other senators that you think would be good, appropriate, people have just so much time to make phone calls to toll-free 888-355-3588 or 888-818-6641. Or you can go to Democrats.com. You can get a list of phone numbers of the senators. Or you can go to Senate.gov. In the upper left-hand corner, click on Senators, and it'll give you the phone numbers and local office numbers if you can't get through to the national office, and the websites of all the various senators. Actually, before we get to that question, we've got the Gang of 14. And the Gang of 14 is apparently meeting this afternoon. My understanding is that, looking at this, it just doesn't make sense to me that the Gang of 14 would bother to meet unless the Republicans didn't have 60 votes to break a filibuster.
Well, I think you're exactly right. I think that's exactly the right message to get from it.
So then we should be targeting the Democrats and the Gang of 14 post-haste, right?
Yes. Mark Pryor is one of them. Mark Pryor's last statement was that he didn't support a filibuster because there was no smoking gun. And I think we found the smoking gun this morning in the front page of the New York Times, which talked about how Sam Alito was chosen by the Federalist Society, which is a far-right group of lawyers, and they've been plotting for 20 years to take over the Supreme Court, to take over all of our courts, and to push the country off to the right. And if that's not a smoking gun, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and it's a fairly scary piece, actually, in the New York Times today. So the Mark Pryor's on the Gang of 14, Ken Salazar of Colorado, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Dan Inouye of Hawaii, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Robert Byrd of West Virginia, and Joe Lieberman of Connecticut. And apparently Robert Byrd has just been terrified by this multimillionaire Republican who's jumped into the race in West Virginia and is going to take him on, John Race. And that's the only possible explanation I can come up for with why Robert Byrd would vote against or in favor of Alito, although has he come out and said whether he would vote to break a filibuster?
No, he has not.
So we should still be calling Robert Byrd?
Yes, he's always been a champion of the prerogatives of the Senate, and filibuster is one of the most crucial prerogatives. So there's an argument you can make with him that, look, even if you support Alito, you really ought to support the Democrats using the filibuster when they feel as deeply as they do.
Yeah, this is not rocket science, my friends. This is not rocket science. This is about the Constitution of the United States
right. And
where we're going to go, what direction this country is going to go in. You look at how, when we had an extremist right-wing court, packed in part by the Republicans going from Ulysses S. Grant through McKinley in the late 19th century, that is starting in 1905 right through 1937, starting in 1905 with the Lochner decision, started ruling against the working people of this country, against wage hour laws, against minimum wage laws, against child labor laws, against maximum hour laws, against the right to unionize, and on and on and on. It wasn't until 1937 that court turned around. It was a full, more than a generation that it took, and we may be looking at the same thing now. Bob Furtick, Democrats.com. Bob, thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure.
Keep up the great work. Keep spreading the good word there, and people, check out Democrats.com for more information. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 16 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls right after this. You can also drop by our chat room, TomHartman.com. Just click live chat. We'll be back. Truth in Broadcasting on the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I've been meek and high like an oak. I've seen pretty feeble, disappear like smoke. Friends will arrive, friends will disappear. If you want me, honey, baby, I'll be here.
And welcome back. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Welcome back to our program, brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, the telephone number. Ellen Ratner's with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com in Washington, D.C. And, Ellen, a wild day today.
A wild day, and of course, we're not sure what's going to wind up, although I'm not terribly hopeful because the Bush administration is making plans to have the swearing in before the State of the Union tomorrow.
Well, and I understand the Heritage Foundation this morning ordered a huge amount of catered food for a party this afternoon.
I am sure.
But still, we, as far as we can tell...
When they have the radio talk show host, they cut down on the food.
Yeah, as far as we can tell now, so far, there's only 56 votes that, in all probability, will vote for cloture. It's, I mean, the Republicans were, on Saturday, they were saying they had 85 votes, 83 votes. Yesterday, they were saying they had 70-some-odd votes.
If I'm a betting woman, they're going to get cloture.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, it's not a bet I'd take, but I think it's still a fight that's worth fighting. And I think
it is definitely a fight worth fighting. I am behind it 100%. Now, if I mean, we can talk about that, but I want to talk about something that's just got me crazy.
Okay, what's got you crazy?
Well, the president is giving his State of the Union tonight, and then Thursday is his annual prayer breakfast. Now, last year there were some Jewish folks that went to the prayer breakfast that got papers handed out to them, not clear who handed them out, saying that, but somewhat, we think, officially sanctioned, saying that Jesus crosses all religions. And then it turns out that what is also happening, of course, there are lots of different groups that go to this prayer breakfast, which has really turned into a Christian prayer breakfast. And now it looks like the government is not only funding Operation Blessing, which is Pat Robertson's group, but the annual revenue from government grants has gone from $108,000 to $14.4 million.
Well, I reported on that on this program last week, Ellen.
Okay. So I'm not always up to everything, but
not to deflate you.
But
yeah, you're absolutely right. This is outrageous.
But
and,
what
and
is to be clear about is when you look at the prayer breakfast and look how it used to be under Clinton and how it has completely turned essentially to be a Christian prayer breakfast, and you have somebody such as Norm Coleman, Jewish, married to a Catholic, chosen to raise his kids Catholic, he is now co-chair of the breakfast, and
mm-hmm.
the Jews in and out of Congress are going bananas.
Wow. Wow.
Very interesting. This prayer breakfast is going to be something to watch even more than State of the Union because of what it shows where the Bushies are going.
You know, George W. Bush first got introduced to the political power of the evangelical movement when he was working on his father's campaign in 92. And he was the guy who was the point man who went out and had contact with the evangelical movement. That was his job on his father's campaign. And that's when he developed those relationships. And the fact that, you know, he constantly uses profanity in private, that his wife smokes cigarettes, you know, as a chain smoker, that...
Well, actually, I believe she has now given up cigarettes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, congratulations to Laura. Probably starting to get
to
her
sure
skin.
She's given up the wine, but she's definitely given up the cigarettes.
Yeah. In any case, there's just, you know, you look at a lot of his behaviors, and it's hard to believe that he really is as much of a true believer as he claims to be. And, you know, I've always been operating the assumption that this is just convenient politics for him. This is a constituency, you know, another group that he can bring along and he can suck up to. It sounds, though, to me like from what you're saying, perhaps he really has gone over the edge and decided that being preacher-in-chief is more important than being commander-in-chief.
I think so. I also want to just read to you a couple of things that he said this morning at his little Q&A after the cabinet meeting. He said, "I can't tell you how upbeat I am about our future so long as we're willing to lead." We talked about, he's talking to how the cabinet and him talked about, how to make sure that America continues to spread the peace and protect ourselves. Spread the peace?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tom, I was like, hello?
Yeah. Well,
Larissa Frost, today's our day to do pool, and Larissa Frost was in the cabinet room. I think she almost fell over, and she was standing.
Well, you got to remember, Ellen, George Bush, I mean, you know, he's pretty unambiguous about this.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
So, you know, if he's going to spread the peace, that means more war, right?
Exactly. Exactly. He spread the peace at the point of a gun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's mind-boggling. And, what's particular, you know, and what that brings into sharp focus, Ellen Radner, is that Sam Alito would be right there with him. You know, onward Christian soldiers.
Sam Alito is going to be so right-wing, he is going to make Scalia look like a left-winger.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty scary. That's pretty hard to do.
It's the scariest thing I have ever seen. However, also one other quick thing, the White House Bulletin, which is a private organization, is reporting today that the people are saying that if he does not begin his State of the Union with something really big that a lot of people are going to tune out State of the Union, which they're calling Bush fatigue.
Yeah, well, I think Bush fatigue is happening all over the world. The toll-free number for Congress, 888-818-6641 or 888-355-3588. Call your senator. Ellen Ratner, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
TalkRadioNews.com. Ellen Ratner's gig there. It's a great organization, and we're so grateful to have you on this program. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls right after this. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yes, the hurricanes are blowing. Welcome back, my folks, my friends. Welcome back, folks. It's 34 minutes past the hour. As Thomas Jefferson said, a little rebellion now and then is a good thing and as necessary in the political world as storms in the physical world. Yeah, there you go. Speaking of storms in the political world, time for a Berlusconi alert. Yes, you'll recall Silvio Berlusconi, a small-time businessman and some would say small-time crook, at least the many prosecutors who have put his business partners in jail, who bought a radio station and then bought a TV station, then bought another radio station, then a couple more TV stations, and then a newspaper, and then another radio station, then bought a radio network, and then a TV network, and then a couple more newspapers, and then another radio network, and then another TV network, and finally, when he controlled about 95% of the media in Italy, ran for prime minister! Well, actually, ran his party so he could get elected prime minister, and guess what? He won! There's a cautionary tale in there somewhere. Anyhow, our Berlusconi alert for the day. Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi is famous for his ambitious promises, this from Reuters, but he is unlikely to be called to task if he breaks his latest pledge not to have sex before the April 9th general election. At a party rally in Sardinia on Saturday, the media tycoon received the blessing of TV preacher Massimiliano Paduzzi, who thanked him for opposing gay marriage and defending family values. And Berlusconi said that he's not going to have sex until April 9th, the elections. It's incredible. The twice married Berlusconi, 69, prides himself on his physical fitness and after a facelift and a hair transplant, looks younger now than he did when he swept the power in 2001. He's often been criticized by commentators and feminist groups for his use of sexual innuendo and sexist jokes. And on it goes. So anyhow, our Berlusconi alert for the day. In fact, in a news conference in 2002, he famously complimented Danish Prime Minister Anders Fogh Rasmussen for his good looks. He said, "He's so handsome, I'm even thinking of introducing him to my wife," Berlusconi chuckled, in reference to political gossip that at the time his wife, a former actress, this is his second wife, was having an affair with a well-known center-left politician. Silvio Berlusconi, running on the same platform as right-wingers here. He's against gay marriage, but he's got no problem with divorce. Yes, that's how you save marriage. Get divorced. Yes. And now he's saying he's not going to have any sex until April 9th. Go figure. And that's, I guarantee in Italy, well, if George Bush had said something like that, be all over the headlines, who cares about what's going on in the Supreme Court, right? No, we care. We care. Our Berlusconi alert for the day. This is what happens when all the media is bought up by one politician. Indeed. Thank you. Our Berlusconi alert, 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, Steve in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing? I'm a conservative, and I'm really against you guys trying to filibuster. You guys started an all-out war. I mean, we bypassed our revenge for Bork.
I beg your pardon?
The Republicans, we bypassed our revenge for Bork.
Revenge for Bork?
Yeah,
Judge Bork, who said that our civil rights laws are archaic, that we should be doing away with them. Judge Bork, who didn't think that women should have rights in the United States.
Game, we could go with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which being the ACLU.
You're talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, whose nomination to the Supreme Court was recommended to Bill Clinton by Orrin Hatch, the Republican from Utah. It was his idea that she be on the court. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who answered truthfully the questions put before her. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who answered honestly when she was asked what she thought about Roe v. Wade, that she supported a woman's right to choose it, whether or not to have an abortion, who honestly answered the questions.
Well, I was just saying, we bypassed our revenge once.
I
don't think it's
so, Steve, you're saying that this is all about your team, my team, and we're going to get you, or if you don't get us. Steve, I think that we're both Americans, and we both love this country, and we both want what's best for this country. And I got to ask you, Steve, if that's true of you, and I'm not sure, maybe it's not, but if that's true of you, and you really do love this country, then why would you want somebody on the Supreme Court who believes that the president should have the powers of a king rather than the powers of the president that are defined in the Constitution?
Well, for one, I mean, if you want to talk about executive power, I mean, I do have some concerns about it, but I also understand during a time of war, you can't fight war by committee.
Steve, you are spitting in the face of James Madison.
Well, wait a second. What president? I mean, if you want to go with presidents who've...
In 1812, Steve, you know the history of the War of 1812? In 1812, the British landed here. They invaded this country. They marched to Washington, D.C., and they burned the frigging White House. And James Madison didn't stand up and say, oh, we've got to suspend the Fourth Amendment and start reading people's mail.
Well,
you talk about the enemy among us. We had the enemy burning down our houses.
Let's go with one of your favorite presidents, from what I gather from listening to you. Let's go with FDR, what he did in World War II. Let's just talk about the Japanese.
That was absolutely wrong. That was absolutely wrong. And we don't want to have somebody on the Supreme Court who will allow any president, Democrat or Republican, to create the kind of concentration camps that Franklin Roosevelt created during World War II.
And when J. Edgar Hoover is the one that says no to FDR, who says, yeah, no, but that probably wouldn't be a good idea, right? But I'm just saying...
I agree with you, Steve. I don't think what you're saying to me is that you don't want a Supreme Court that would allow FDR to create a concentration camp. Neither do I. And Sam Alito is the guy on the Supreme Court who would say yes to that. And, in fact, who already has.
What is that called? What I'm saying is during war, you can't fight war by committee. This is not a law enforcement problem. This is a
Steve, your cliches
problem.
Are getting mixed up. First of all, you do fight war by a committee. That's why you've got the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you've got the Army, you've got the Air Force, you've got the Navy, you've got the Marines. They have to work with each other. You've got the State Department that's interacting with other countries around the world. You've got to bring together coalitions. You've got the President. You've got members of Congress. That's a committee. You do fight war by committee. The only countries that don't fight war by committee are called dictatorships.
But you cannot go through a bunch of endless talking. War demands action. You can't have a bunch of endless talking.
Exactly. That's how Franklin Roosevelt kicked the butts of the Germans and the Japanese, by committee. He brought together the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, the Air Force, the U.S. Senate, the U.S. House of Representatives, the Supreme Court. He brought them together and he fought
and
a number of allies.
And
brought them together and fought the Germans and fought the Japanese and beat them.
And he made decisions. Well, you need to make decisions now, not a month from now, not a during a war. You need to make decisions now.
FISA, if you're talking about wiretapping Americans, the FISA law says you can decide right now to wiretap somebody and you have up to 3 days to go back and ask for a warrant.
I'll give you that point. I don't understand. They could have come back 72 hours and they're what?
And I got to ask you, Steve, if Bill Clinton was saying, hey, I've wiretapped people here in the United States, and I'm not going to tell you who it is, and you just have to trust me on this. Wouldn't you think that he's probably wiretapping Republicans?
No, I'm not a hypocrite. I'm just saying, if Bill Clinton, if Al Gore was president right now, and if a few votes in Florida went the other way, no, he needs executive power. I mean, I'm not bipartisan on the executive power and the ability to fight a war. I'm not bipartisan on that.
But what does this have to do with fighting a war? What does strip searching 10-year-old girls when there's no warrant for them have to do with fighting a war? What does attaching signing statements to over 500 pieces of legislation where the president is changing the meaning of the legislation itself to suit his own needs, what does that have to do with fighting a war? We're talking about a guy who is changing the nature of America, who is rolling back democracy, Steve.
Well,
and Alito it was Alito's idea to come up with the signing statements. But when Bush doing this is doing what Sam Alito proposed Ronald Reagan started doing in 1986.
Well, what I'm saying is most wars, and now most wars, civil rights take a back seat. I mean, there's not an exception. I mean, Republican or Democrat, some civil rights are taking a back seat during
and
war.
Every time they have, Steve, we look back and we say, damn, we shouldn't have done that. We shouldn't have put those Japanese in concentration camps. Lincoln shouldn't have suspended habeas corpus. And Wilson shouldn't have locked up people. Say that again?
Well, I think Lincoln should have suspended habeas corpus.
Well, actually, Lincoln, you could argue that Lincoln had the authority to suspend habeas corpus because the Constitution says that the president has the right to suspend habeas corpus in the event of an insurrection. And if the Civil War wasn't an insurrection, I don't know what was. But in any case, my point is, aren't we capable of learning from the mistakes of our past?
Well, I'm not saying all these were mistakes. The Japanese concentration camps were a mistake, but...
So what else did FDR do that he shouldn't have done?
Well, instead of when he couldn't get people in jail, he called them lunatics and put them in the loony bin. Wild Bill Donovan's OSS, they called them lunatics and threw them in the loony bin, right, so he could bypass the courts. Then let's go with some of the Geneva Convention breaking. Let's remember the Battle of the Bulge. This is just one example. The Battle of the Bulge, right, the SS wasn't taking prisoners, and Eisenhower said, don't take SS prisoners, kill them all.
Yeah.
And so,
frankly, I don't know the history of the Battle of the Bulge, so I can't argue the point with you, Steve. But the larger point here is America has always been the example to the world of liberty. You know, when those 15,000 people met in Tiananmen Square in 1989, as I recall, 88, whatever year it was, and marched, many of them to their death and imprisonment, they carried a 36-foot-tall papier-mâché statue of the Statue of Liberty, called her the Goddess of Liberty, and they were quoting from Jefferson and Tom Paine. George W. Bush has torn us apart. He has torn this nation down in the eyes of the world. The world no longer looks to us and says, we want to be like them. They look at us and say, holy cow, we don't want to be like them, except for the tin pot dictators who are all saying, oh, we're fighting a war on terror, too. China is now saying that they're fighting a war on terror and using that as an excuse to throw into prison people from Falun Gong and Christian sects. Is this the kind of world you want, Steve? I don't think so. Steve, we're out of time. I appreciate the conversation, and it's good talking with you. We'll continue. We'll continue the program. But thanks a lot, Steve. 45 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, or at least a rational person on the United States Supreme Court. Time will tell. The vote is going to be taken about an hour and a half after this program ends. At 1:30 Pacific time, 4:30 Eastern time, and then we'll find out how it's going. Doug in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Doug, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I called Harry Reid's office earlier, and Harry Reid is not committed on not ending closure or voting for closure. He says that he's not committed, and I just think, you know, what kind of a leader is he?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like the antithesis of leadership.
Right. I mean, it seems like it's time for him to step down as a leader, you know, and in fact, just get out of there.
Yeah.
I just feel like if these guys are going to act like Republicans, why not just have Republicans in there?
Well, and a good point. I mean, that's the point that Harry Truman made. I mean, Harry Truman was an outspoken Democrat and a progressive Democrat who, you know, tried to introduce national health care to this country and a whole lot of other progressive reforms. And Harry Truman once said, if the American people are getting, and he was talking about Democrats in the Democratic Party who were behaving like Republicans, and he said, it's suicide. He said, if the American people are given a choice between a Republican or a Democrat who behaves like a Republican, they'll choose the Republican every time.
Right.
And it's not because people like Republicans better. It's because people like people who are consistent to their beliefs and true to their beliefs.
Right.
And now the old saying about, you know, stop, lead, or get out of the way, or whatever it is, you know, there's an old cliche to that effect. But the point is, and maybe Harry Reid is starting to get this. I don't know. I think a lot of these senators are starting to get this, that we don't elect leaders in the United States. We don't elect kings in the United States. We elect representatives. We have a representative democracy. That was what was so unique about it. That when we started this representative democracy in 1787, it was different from the Greek democracy in that the Greek democracy required 6,001 citizens to show up to change a law. And basically everybody had to be there. You know, it's on this little island of Athens. Whereas here we elect representatives, and they're supposed to represent us. So we're the ones in charge. The first three words of the Constitution are, we the people. And we're the ones in charge. We are the leaders. And we are asserting our leadership right now. I mean, look at all these senators who are going from, oh, I don't think I'll go, oh, yes, okay, here I am. And hopefully Harry Reid will figure out that we are the leaders and that he's, you know, this is what the people of America want. I mean, you know, I have no problem, frankly, with politicians taking polls because it's one way of finding out what the people want and because they're supposed to be doing what the people want.
Well, I can't help but think that one of the most valuable lessons we learned from Ronald Reagan was he got on the TV and he said, call your senator, call your congressman. And by God, people listened.
Yeah.
You know, people got on the phones, they sent those emails, and Reagan was able to get almost every one of his policies through.
Yeah, he was a very good salesman. He was very persuasive.
So I really want to urge people to please call Harry Reid, even if you're not in Nevada. He is the Senate Minority Leader, and call his office. Tell him that, you know, tell them that you want him to take a stand on this.
And the toll-free phone number
that he's supposed to be.
And the toll-free number that you can use, and thank you, Doug, for that. I appreciate it. The toll-free number that you can use to contact Harry Reid is 888-355-3588. And if that line is busy, you can try 888-818-6641. And if that doesn't work, the direct line to the switchboard of the White House or at the Capitol Hill is 202-225-3121. Jill in Allendale, Michigan. Hey, Jill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better.
Good. I just want Just a couple of things. I just talked to my husband recently, and he called to let me know that he got put through to Debbie Stabenow's office, and she said she would support a filibuster.
Right. In fact, she gave a marvelous speech this morning on the floor of the Senate, and in fact, you know, little pieces of it that I caught, it was almost as if she'd started a filibuster.
Okay. So. Well, I had called myself, then that spurred me on, so I called and got put through to Senator Byrd's office, but... and I wanted to let him know that, you know, I was hoping to hear that he might, you know, think about supporting a filibuster. And anyway, I got put through to his mailbox, and all I got was a recording saying that it was full. So I wasn't able to talk to anybody there.
I wonder if that, you know, I've been hearing that there's this AstroTurf movement, that this they've got this Republican who's going to run against him. The guy's a multimillionaire. They're throwing a lot of money into this. And that they had hired, you know, that they had phone banks calling him, pretending to be like the average citizen kind of thing, that this AstroTurf, you know, phony grassroots. And I wonder if the reason his mailbox is full is because he's been getting all kinds of calls from phony Republicans.
Yep. That could be.
Interesting.
I don't know. I just I was hoping just to let him know how I was feeling and just to see if we could get through.
Yeah.
And like
it's
your previous
take,
caller, there's other people to continue on down the list.
Yep. It's going to take a while for the history of this thing to be written, but it's going to be a fascinating one. Jill, thanks for the call. Marty in Sacramento, California. We've got less than a half a minute left. Marty, quick point you wanted to make about World Can't Wait?
Yes, I just got on the website. They don't mention on one of these talk show, this about, protests across the country. There's a list, all the city in your local area, and it's worldcan'twait.net.
Okay.
And listen to this, there's an interesting, in Hollywood, California, right on front of CNN building, they're going to have a protest front of that building with the major news media, and we're going to wait and see if they will get attention from this major news media.
That's marvelous.
Yeah.
Marty. Yeah.
And
World Can't Wait. Now, is that the organization? They put out the ad in the New York Times, or was that?
I don't know.
I don't have it in front of me.
I just happened to get on one link, and I did a search, and I click on WorldNet.
WorldCan'tWait.net, yeah. There's a bunch of these protests going on across the United States, and there's a whole bunch of organizations, you know, calling for impeachment of George W. Bush and so on. But right now, like a laser, we need to be focusing our attention on sustaining a filibuster of Sam Alito and saying, no, No right-wing extremists on the Supreme Court. It's just that simple. The stakes for America are too high. We'll be going through in the next hour what exactly the stakes are in this country. It's 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
It was 1795. James Madison, the father of the Constitution, had just gotten the Bill of Rights ratified, and he wrote a letter to a friend on April 20th, 1795. Welcome back to the program, by the way, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. He wrote a letter to a friend. Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies. From these proceed debts and taxes. And armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. In war, too, the discretionary power of the president is extended. His influence in dealing out offices, honors, and emoluments is multiplied, and all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of subduing the force of the people. The same malignant aspect in republicanism may be traced in the inequality of fortunes and the opportunities of fraud growing out of a state of war, and in the degeneracy of manners and morals engendered by both. No nation... Our fourth president and the father of the Constitution concluded, no nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. No nation. And yet, what do we have here now? We have George W. Bush telling us we are in a war that's going to last for generations. And he needs special powers for that war. For example, the new Patriot Act, which has buried in a little Section 3, 605, expanding the Secret Service from a presidential protection detail to a national police force with the power to designate any place where people are meeting in the United States as a SENSE, Special Event of National Significance, S-E-N-S. And once they designate a SENSE, then the SS, the Secret Service, shall have the power, quoting the Patriot Act now, to carry firearms and make arrests without warrant for any offense against the United States committed in their presence. This is not new, my friends. This is not new. Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, it's argued by many, including their biographers, variously, extended the Vietnam War to run over election cycles for political benefit. It's a strategy that George Orwell laid out back in the 1950s when he wrote 1984 about a hopefully non-existent dystopian future where a seemingly democratic president kept his nation in a state of continual repression through continuous war. In fact, one of the more famous sayings that came out of 1984 was, war is peace. It was one of the posters. One of the posters in the book 1984 that was on the walls of buildings. You know, Big Brother says, don't forget, war is peace.
And when we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Yeah. Similarly, Adolf Hitler used the 1933 burning of the Reichstaggebäude, the parliament building, by a deranged Dutchman, Marius van der Lubbe, to declare what he called his war on terrorism. You are now witnessing the beginning of a great epoch in history, said Adolf Hitler, standing in front of the fire, in front of the flames of the parliament building. This fire, he said, is the beginning. It's a sign from God, said Adolf Hitler, the burning of the Reichstag building. He said the people who burned the building were evil. And he could trace their origins to the Middle East, where they found their motivation for their evil deeds and their religion, said Hitler. 2 weeks later, the first prison for terrorists was built in Oranienburg, holding the first suspected allies of the infamous terrorist, Marius van der Lubbe. Within 4 weeks of that terrorist attack, the nation's leader, Adolf Hitler, had pushed through legislation in the name of combating terrorism that suspended constitutional guarantees of free speech, privacy, and the rights of habeas corpus. Police could now intercept mail and wiretap phones without warrants. Suspected terrorists could be imprisoned without specific charges and without access to their lawyers. And people could sneak into people's homes without warrants if the cases involved terrorism. To get his patriotic decree on the protection of people and state passed over the objections of concerned legislators and civil libertarians, Hitler agreed to put a 4-year sunset provision on it. If the national emergency provoked by the terrorist attack on the Reichstag building was over by then, the freedoms and rights would be returned to the people and the police agencies would be re-restrained. He then looked at his personal security service, his personal security detail, the SOSTRO, and expanded it into a nationwide police force, the Schutzstaffel, answerable only to him, and thus with virtually unlimited powers of arrest and imprisonment. And now we're seeing this played out all over again, and in large part, the reason that Adolf Hitler was able to pull this stuff off was because the Supreme Court of Germany went along with it. The people of Germany went along with it. The members of the Parliament of Germany, they stood up and they gave nice speeches, but they were really afraid to go against this guy because he was a bully. And they were afraid if they angered him that his revenge would be a terrible thing. And, oh, we can't afford to anger them. And they had talk show hosts who were saying, well, we can't afford to anger these people, these Nazis. Literally talking about the Nazis. If we just go along with them, they'll be reasonable. And it seemed that they were for the first couple of years. The economy boomed with all the military spending. Trains were running on time. The roads were getting built. People had jobs again. Good times. Until, as you know, his political power was starting to wane, and Hitler said, you know, there's a country next door that has weapons of mass destruction. Poland. They're massing an army on our borders. They're planning to invade Germany. We have to strike first. And for the first time in the 20th century, the doctrine of the first strike was employed by Adolf Hitler against Poland. And for the second time, well, for the first time in the 21st century, it was the one and only time in the 20th century that a major power did that. The one and only time in the 21st century, George W. Bush against Iraq. I mean, the parallels here are absolutely spooky. We have five concentration camps now in Guantanamo. We are building a death camp down there. They're talking about moving all the federal executions from Leavenworth down to there. And all facilitated by the judiciary. And George W. Bush wants to put onto the Supreme Court of the United States a guy who would say, sure, you do it. In fact, who was the author, the architect of many of the strategies used by Bush to bring this about. The toll-free number for your senator, frankly, you know, we need to contact Harry Reid. We need to contact the Gang of Seven, Lieberman, Byrd, Nelson, Landrieu. In a way, Pryor and Salazar, the Gang of 14, excuse me, the seven Democrats on the Gang of 14. I would suggest contacting the Republicans on the Gang of 14. John McCain, Lindsey Graham, John Warner, Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, Mike DeWine, Lincoln Chafee. And say, you know, if 60 votes can't be gathered, if 40 people in the United States Senate want to filibuster this nomination, then they must feel strongly enough, they must believe that this is a risk to this country. We should take that seriously. This isn't about one party trying to win over another party. This is not political. This is why the Democrats in the first place were not inclined to do this, tragically. This is about the future of our republic, the future of democracy in the United States of America, and ultimately, in my opinion, the future of the world. Because so often, as goes America, goes the rest of the world. James Madison, by the way, the same guy who said, no nation can preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare, was president during the War of 1812. When British troops showed up on U.S. soil, marched to Washington, D.C., and burned the White House. And you want an act of terrorism? And Madison didn't think he had to suspend the Fourth Amendment for that? I mean, come on, let's wake up here. And stop with these silly cliches of 9/11 changed everything. I'm sorry, 9/11 was nothing compared to the War of 1812. And democracy survived that. It's 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
All hail Alan Greenspan! Mr. Greenspan,
yes.
Give us a clue. We buy our stock based on the things that you do. You scratch your butt, so we're now surviving. The stock and preparation age is rising. Greenspan, sweetheart, you sneeze. My Kleenex futures from here to Belize. Robitussin's is riding high. Mr. Greenspan. Bye, 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 bye,
and
bye,
welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. I'll tell you what, you know, it's it seems that a lot of investors are moving in the direction of gold and oil, which aren't necessarily the cleanest investments. But holy cow, it's what the direction that this economy is being driven by the Bush economic policies. It's just nuts. Mimi in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Mimi, welcome to the program.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I just want to tell you that I appreciate your knowledge and your integrity. It's nice to hear the truth and be informed.
Well, thank
you. I'm calling on about three different issues. I have another phone number for you that your listeners can call to get in toll-free to the Senate.
Okay.
And I can't promise they'll get through to the senator, but typically you can get through to the operator, and it's 1-800-426-8073.
Okay.
The other thing is, many of them that I've spoken to, they ask my zip code.
Mm-hmm.
And I just tell them, that is an insult. I am a citizen of the United States, and the Alito confirmation will change our lives for as long as I'll be alive. And please don't insult me by asking me my zip code. I think it's just untenable. Not all of them do it. But some of them do it.
Well, I'll tell you why they're doing it, Mimi. And there's actually, you know, I'm to defend them. When you or I elect, for example, you have Maria Cantwell and Patty Murray as your senators in Washington.
Yes.
Washington may have concerns or interests that are different from the concerns or interests of Texas, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when you may want Maria Cantwell and Patty Murray to vote in the United States Senate in ways that reflect the needs of the state of Washington, even when the needs of the state of Washington are in opposition to the needs of the state of Texas, for example.
I understand. But I've made it clear that I'm calling about Alito.
No, I understand that, and I understand what you're saying. But I believe that every senator really has a responsibility. Now, there's one exception to this, which I'll give you in just a second, but I really believe that every senator has a responsibility to give first priority to the people from their own state, the people that they actually represent, because that's their job, is to represent those people. Now, on the other hand, we do have some people who are holding kind of a secondary office. In addition to being elected, Harry Reid, for example, from Nevada, in addition to being elected to the United States Senate to represent Nevada, then all of the senators, which includes your two senators who represent you, elected him to represent all of the Democrats. So now Harry Reid is also your senator in a way. And so when you call Harry Reid's office, you know, if they ask you for your zip code, you know, I can understand your response. Or you know, I'd try to be a little, I would say, you know, here's my zip code, but really, Harry Reid is representing all of us, isn't he? Not just Nevada. I mean, I thought that he was the leader of the Senate. You know, that's how I would say it. But in any case, you know, I understand your point. But if I was just calling, for example, Lincoln Chafee or Susan Olympia Snow or Susan Collins or, you know, one of the Republicans that might swing or one of the Democrats, Robert Byrd in West Virginia, for example, I'd say, you know, here's my zip code. I'm not a constituent, but I am a citizen of the United States, and your vote does count. And I plead, you know, please consider this. And because I'm concerned that in the confrontational approach is probably going to get you not counted rather than counted.
Well, they're just supposed to count pro or con.
I
would assume that
I know, but they're
so
all human. They're all human beings.
At this point, they are not even personalizing it.
Yeah,
there's
probably
two other issues.
Sure.
I'm sure you're aware that Bush made two recess appointments to the Federal Election Commission that had not gotten through the Senate.
That's right, and so they were both cronies of his.
Exactly. Those who control the voting system control our country.
Well, or as Joe Stalin said, those who vote decide nothing. Those who count the votes decide everything.
Exactly. And there's one other thing. I don't support the Democrats not attending the State of the Union. What I do support is that they participate by staying in their chairs and not standing or clapping. That way they're the opposition and they represent what many of us out here would do if we could be there and we could participate.
Now, I think I don't disagree with you, Mimi, in broad sweep, and I suspect that what you're going to see is that, see, there's two things. When George Bush walks onto the stage, there's really two things going on. Number one, it's George Bush. And number two, it's the President of the United States. And so as a senator, even as a Democrat, I would think that it would be appropriate for them to stand and say, recognizing the office of the presidency of the United States, okay, to stand and applaud when he arrives and perhaps when he leaves. But throughout his speech, there's going to be all these points where he's going to stop for applause lines. And I suspect during those times, the Democrats are going to be sitting there with their hands in their lap because that's what's happened in the past. And that's the appropriate thing to do as far as protocol goes.
You may already know this. Barack Obama's answer to the filibuster is, if you want to make the nominations, get elected.
Yeah.
And that's just fine, but it's a little bit simplistic.
Yes, I agree. Mimi,
okay,
thanks a lot
for
the call.
Bye-bye.
Good points. Good points. Good points all. We'll be back with more of your phone calls. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. What a novel idea. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends, to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. Tom Hartman here helping you win the water cooler wars. Bob in Seattle, Washington on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Bob.
How are you? Hey, I watched the documentary last night on Canadians Channel, or the Canada Channel, CBC, I think it is, up in Seattle.
Right.
It's about the rise of China, and it's pretty interesting. It's a look into the future, and a couple of things I picked up on was that they believe their key to the economic growth is a very prosperous middle class.
Well, and they're doing the same thing that we did to build that middle class, and that is they're erecting tariffs. If an automobile company wants to, if GM wants to sell cars in China, they have to pay a 25% import tax, an import tariff to the Chinese government to import that car into China. But if, on the other hand, we're wiping out our middle class, if China wants to sell a car into the United States, it's a 2% import tariff. Tell me what's wrong with that picture.
It is, but this whole documentary is like a crystal ball. I mean, they're giving up their workable land for agriculture for business.
Yeah.
And I found it rather intriguing. And you know, it's like the middle class isn't vanishing; it's just moving from one country to another. And I guess you know something to back that up with. When I was reading on Buzzflash last weekend or Friday, did you see that almost 25,000 people applied for a total of 375 jobs at a new Walmart in Chicago?
No, but I'm not surprised. On the other hand, there was a piece in the Wall Street Journal last week about how over a million people applied for 10,000 government jobs in China because the Chinese people increasingly are becoming disenchanted with working for big corporations because they're concerned that they'll get downsized, they'll get outsourced, they don't have union representation, it's not a stable job, the companies come and go, all that kind of thing. It's, potentially really grim. But anyhow, Bob, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good point you make and interesting conversation.
You know it's nice when the postman has a letter in his sack.
Indeed. Well, let's just check out here a little bit of email. Last Friday, we had Bernie Sanders on, and this guy called up and was talking, going on and on and on about a spot welder in an auto plant making $50 an hour, which is more than he and his wife combined earned. And Shannon sends me an email saying, I was listening to your rebroadcast, you know, about that. And he said, I did a sampling of upper-level auto plant salaries over at hotjobs.com. And as I suspected, the highest salary I found was $27 an hour for a level 3 sheet metal mechanic. This was the top of the scale for a sheet metal mechanic. A level 3 welder, the spot welder he talked about, he complained about, topped out at $22 an hour. He said, I have heard of this mythical union worker who cannot tie his own shoes but gets $40 an hour to push a button 8 hours a day, and I have yet to meet this individual. My father was a union lather for 40 years, among the best in the world in his trade, could have gone anywhere in the world and made a good living since it was a dying trade and the supply of workers was dwindling. His top pay scale was $25 an hour in 1993 when he retired. He said, I think, and Shannon says, I think we need to confront these lies that are being thrown all over the place about how union workers are lazy and overpaid. I hear it all the time, all over the place, that poor people who are busting their butts for chicken feed. The anti-unionists are feeding the working public this stuff to breed envy and enmity between workers. The last thing they want is for workers to get along. Keep the workers angry with each other and they won't unite. They'll be so busy being angry with each other that they won't have time to be angry at the man. Thanks for your hard work. Well said, Shannon. Thank you very much for getting back with us. Our chat room, by the way, is up at tomhartman.com. Our message board is down for the day, and we will have it up later this afternoon, but we're actually moving it over to a different server that can handle it a little better, a little more conveniently, and do a little better and faster job with it. So the message board will be back up either tonight or tomorrow. So it's not a conspiracy, and it's got nothing to do with the filibuster, something that's been scheduled for a couple of weeks now. Bonnie in Burgettstown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bonnie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Regarding the caller about senators' offices asking for zip codes, whenever I get that question, I ask, do you ask lobbyists of large corporations what their zip codes are?
Oh, that's a good one.
And they usually can't answer right away, so I graciously say, I'm a concerned citizen of Pennsylvania, but I'm a flesh and blood person who cares about every state in this great country, and I care about the Constitution, that this administration and a Supreme Court justice like Alito, you know, they treat it like toilet paper. But let me make your job easier as one flesh and blood citizen to another. My zip code is, you know, so I get my little stab in there.
You get your speech in. Good.
You have to do it every chance you get and be nice. And when I get surveys from people like Bill Clinton or Harry Reid, there's usually a comment section where I tell them to disband the DLC, grow a spine, and fight for traditional Democratic values, which are American values, and I tell them I contribute individually to stand up Dems only.
I do the same thing.
Good.
In fact, I've gotten several solicitations recently from the DCCC, you know, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee.
Too.
And in every single case, I replied to them, you know, when you get the DLC out of the DCCC, you'll get some of my money. You know, and until then, I'm sending it to individuals that I know are not. Well, I don't go in this long rant with them, but I'll say, you know, until then, I'm sending it to individual candidates, you know, supporting people like Bernie Sanders, for example.
That's right. Or Tammy Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one.
Yep.
I like to support her. And I have one other question. What was the name of the website? There was a guy, I think, in your last hour who was talking about a survey, a Zogby poll with Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's over at opednews.com.
I'm sorry, what again?
Op-ed, as in opinion editorial, opednews.com. And that's Rob Call's website, and he's the one who financed that, paid the Zogby organization to do it. And it's a good, solid scientific poll. And what was really startling about that poll, the thing that I thought was most impressive, was that they first, there are several Democrats running for the opportunity to run against Rick Santorum.
Uh-huh.
And with Bob Casey, I believe his name is, the guy who's out in front.
Uh-huh.
And when they simply said, who would you most likely vote for, Casey was beating Santorum. And then when they said, okay, here are the candidates' positions on the issues, and they said, Casey's pro-life, Casey's in favor of free trade, so-called free trade, they went through the issues, and you discover Casey's not a progressive, he's a DLC Democrat, or a Republican light, or whatever you want to call it. Then suddenly, the progressives who are running against him, like Chuck Panaccio, are all of a sudden way up on the scale, and people are saying, and they're even having higher votes against Santorum than Casey had when people didn't know what he stood for.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, what that tells me is that there is a solid progressive constituency out there, and politicians need to be approaching it. Anyhow, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you, and I do appreciate it. Larry in Seattle on the line. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hi, Tom. After hearing Mr. Harvey from the Family Security Center this morning, I wrote him off an email and managed to get it posted on your message board before it went down under my email to Harvey, so he can read it there or you can read it there. I've also got a DVD from Netflix on Enron, the smartest guy in the room. I'll be watching that tonight to get
that's an amazing movie, Larry. That's an amazing movie. Louise and I saw that in the theater, and it's if any of our listeners, if you haven't seen The Smartest Guys in the Room yet, the movie about Enron, it's worth renting, or you can buy DVDs these days for $10-$12. I mean, whatever they cost, it's worth it. It's worth the cost of the popcorn,
AM 1090, the Seattle station has got a contest going where that is a prize.
Oh, really? Oh, website. That's marvelous. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go to the website.
Contest.
Yeah, and the website is?
AM 1090.
AM1090.com?
I believe that's what it is. You can find it under that. It's KPTK.
Right. Yeah.
But the reason I called was about the economy. And it seems like over the past 30 or 40 years, we've used two standards to judge our economy, and that is gold and crude oil.
Well, actually, most people, I think if you were to ask most people how you measure the health of the country, they would say it's the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which really has very little to do with the health of the country. But when it collapsed in 29, it was the thing that spooked everybody, and right now everybody's watching it. I suspect that when you talk about the price of oil and the price of gold, it's sufficiently subtle that, I know what you're talking about, but I don't think most people do.
Well, most people should look at it, because if they did, they would see that crude oil has gone from about $30 a barrel when George Bush came into power to over $66 a barrel. Gold has gone from $275 an ounce to over $550 an ounce,
right,
both having over doubled. Our income, for those of us in the lower 70% or 80% of the income bracket, has only gone up about 20%. So all in all, our economy, those in the lower 80%, has gone down by at least 50%.
Yeah, and there's a lag time. But to the point that you're making, Larry, that, again, for those folks who aren't familiar with this, gold and oil being internationally traded commodities, there is the variable of scarcity, particularly with regard to oil right now, and the fact that oil is controlled by a cartel. But you don't see that so much with gold. And the fact that the price of both of these things has doubled during the 5 years that Bush has been in power could be interpreted by, and is interpreted by many, and I interpret it, as meaning not that the price of oil and gold have gone up, but that the value of the dollar has gone down.
Exactly.
And this is the world voting on whether or not they trust Bush's economic policies or not.
Well,
and
the way that we'll note it, we'll see it in the near future, is whether or not the holders of our dollars get off of our dollar and go into other currency.
Right, and this is why the Iranian threat to create an oil bourse based in euros starting in March, starting a month and a half from now, 4 weeks, 5 weeks from now, is something that is very, very concerning with regard to the dollar and, and oil in general. And when Saddam Hussein threatened to do it, of course, we attacked him. We'll see how that one plays out. Larry, thanks for the call. 45 minutes past there.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square.
Indeed, it's coming, friends.
It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of decay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
One way or another, eventually, we're going to roll back this, what they think is a titled aristocracy, this kleptocracy, and return democracy to the United States of America. Welcome back, my friends. Senator Patty Murray's phone in Everett, Washington, 425-259-6515. In Seattle, 206-553-5545. In Everett, you can reach Maria Cantwell's office in 425-303-0114. In Seattle at 206-220-6400. And those, just, you know, a couple that we've got there, I just got those from one of the folks over there, from Jill over at the Young Turks. They're doing a filibuster for the filibuster on their program. And Mike Malloy and me and Peter B. Collins and Brad Friedman and a few others help pitch in over the weekend on that one. And on it goes. Mary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Mary, listening on WPTT, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. This is Susan B. Anthony from Portland. I don't know if you, you're the one that got me to do that.
I beg your pardon?
I was with Susan B. Anthony at the Portland Voters' Rights Conference.
Oh, okay. But you're in Pittsburgh right now, and your name is Mary, right?
Yeah.
I clicked the right button.
Yeah, I'm from Pittsburgh is my home.
Great.
Western Pennsylvania area.
Yeah.
And we've got a heck of a fight going on down here in Pennsylvania with our state is in urgent need, as many states are, of getting bills passed for voter-verified paper records or ballots. But, you know, with the HAVA, Help America Vote Act, deadline looming so soon, our first federal election is May, our state primary, counties are just moving like crazy to buy machines. And we, here in Pittsburgh, which is the Allegheny County, which is the second largest county in Pennsylvania, there is a meeting tomorrow morning. It's a continuation of a meeting that we had, that the county election board had on Friday, to consider purchasing machines from Diebold, paperless machines from Diebold, at an incredibly deep discount. We're very concerned because...
Oh, they're giving these things away right now.
Oh, they're practically paying the county to take them.
And you know how they'll make their money is on the back end. It's just like you buy a printer, and then you have to pay for the ink cartridges forever.
Mm-hmm.
And the printer companies actually don't make a profit on the printers that they sell, or they make a very small profit. Some of them have actually been known to sell at a loss. They make their money on the ink cartridges because you've got, you know, 5 cents worth of ink and they charge $40 for the ink cartridge. Similarly, Diebold will sell you the machine, but they license you the software. So your county is going to be paying Diebold forever for that machine.
Exactly. And it's not just Allegheny County, Tom. They are doing this in at least 20 counties in Pennsylvania that we know of. You know, and our state is one of the swingingest of swing states.
This is a tragedy. This is a tragedy, Mary. It's time to just go back to paper. I mean, we know how to do it with paper. We can count paper. It works. We don't need those thinking voting machines. You know, Canada just had a national election. They did the entire thing with pencils on paper. Europe has elections. They do it with pencils on paper. It works all over the world. It worked in Iraq. You know, it worked in Afghanistan. We can do it here, too. So, Mary, is there a specific call for action for our listeners in Pittsburgh, in the Pittsburgh area? You got a phone number or a website?
Yeah, we have a website up at votepa.us. That's votepa.us. And if there's some action alerts at the top of the page, and we have a calendar with some information. Anyone who wants further information, email through that website, and I will get back to them tonight with particulars about this meeting.
Great.
And other counties.
Great. Good on you. Mary, thanks so much. Great
thank
to hear
you.
From you. Tara in Seattle. Hey, Tara, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
I actually spent quite some time calling Senators Murray and Cantwell's offices this morning for the first time.
Actually, good on you.
The first time as a constituent. I'm a newspaper mm-hmm. reporter, and I am not working right now. So this is the first time I have actually felt free to participate in the process, if you will. What I did say to both of them is that with, you know, regardless of what their right is to use their ideological views, and by the way, I'm a progressive, and I am as concerned as anyone about Judge Alito's apparent disregard for the for reproductive choice and other issues like that. But there was one thing about the hearings that really troubled me, and I don't believe it goes to ideology at all. Senator Schumer tried every which way but loose to get him to commit to upholding the very specific language of the 14th Amendment, which is that the rights of citizenship shall be granted to all persons born or naturalized in the U.S. Now, unlike the Second Amendment or anything that abortion rights tries to use privacy of, there's really no ambiguity in this.
Mm-hmm.
And he would not commit to upholding that in the absence of some sort of, you know, legislative action to amend the Constitution. And I find that, I told both offices, that I find that alone grounds for a filibuster, of course, and also not confirmation.
You're pointing out that the basis of Roe v. Wade was not just the Fourth Amendment. In the Roe v. Wade decision, they looked not just at the Fourth Amendment, they also looked at the 14th Amendment and several other amendments.
Correct.
Amendment
but what
well.
I'm referring to, Tom, is that it appears that they were asking the question with, in order to see how he feels about citizenship.
Right. And he wouldn't take a position. I know. I understand, Tara. I absolutely agree with you. Sam Alito is bad news for America. And we're going to find out in an hour and a half how this thing plays out.
Sure,
so I encourage
sure,
people.
We're not going
to
like it.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Tara, thanks a lot for the call. We gotta boogie along, but the telephone number, 888-355-3588, toll-free to the United States Senate, or 800-426-8073, 800-426-8073, or 888-888-818-6641, 888-818-6641. Let your senators, and let, in particular, the senators of the Gang of 14 know what you think. It's 57 minutes past the hour. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.